Hi, everybody. Welcome to English Digest. I'm Tom.
I'm Stephanie.
And again, it's our work of literature, or our unit on literature, I should say. We've been discussing our featured work of literature, The Importance of Being Earnest. We summarized this play in our first program, and in our last program, we talked about the author, Oscar Wilde. And today we're going to go back to our featured work of literature and talk about some of the themes and ideas in this play and why we think you might enjoy reading it yourself.
Oh, yeah. It's very fun. And this particular discussion today will be about some of the themes that you'll find in this. There's some great words we're going to be going over today as well. So stay tuned. We're going to read through today's lesson and then we'll be back.
The Importance of Being Earnest is a brilliant comedy of manners that satirizes the ideals and practices of the Victorian upper classes. Wilde emphasizes their rigid ethos, which demanded proper behavior and high moral standards. These included being respectable, being polite, and marrying someone to maintain one's wealth and social class. For instance,Lady Bracknell forbids Gwendolyn's engagement to someone from an unknown background and only approves of Algernon's marriage to Cecily once she finds out the girl will inherit a fortune. The play also criticizes Victorian society, in which unacceptable behavior may be excused as long as people present the appearance of behaving appropriately. Cecily and Gwendolyn's tea party demonstrates this hypocrisy.Due to their misunderstanding, the two women can barely hold back their anger and insult each other through cleverly chosen, seemingly polite words. They maintain an air of proper Victorian behavior by having tea together. However, good manners don't stop Cecily from putting sugar in Gwendolyn's tea when she doesn't want any and serving Gwendolyn cake when she requests bread and butter.The play's title itself is a satirical comment on society's ideals. Wilde built the play around a pun. Men who both are and are not earnest or earnest. To be earnest is to be serious and sincere, yet both Jack and Algernon lead secret double lives in order to pursue pleasure and take a break from their social duties. Even when the truth is revealed,The couples happily continue with their lives without a shred of guilt or anger for deceiving others or being deceived themselves.
Okay, guys, we're talking about some of the themes that you'll find in this particular play. The Importance of Being Earnest is a brilliant comedy of manners. If it's a comedy of manners, do you know this is an actual term if you're talking about drama, which is very interesting. It's where you'll often see manners or the way society is expected to act become the focal point, which means the most important part of something rather than the situation that's going on. So it's a comedy of manners. They're making fun the way that society is supposed to have behaved during the Victorian era. And it satirizes the ideals and practices of the Victorian upper classes. So true. Satire is very smart humor. That's how I describe it. You have to really be listening. It's very clever. It's witty. It's not the usual humor we see in movies where we call it, you know, bathroom humor or toilet humor, where someone throws up or there's a bathroom situation or scene and, you know, everybody laughs because it's silly and kind of stupid comedy. Satire is very...I would say it's very high-class comedy. It's very witty. You have to be really thinking. It's such a fun play, though. So they're making fun of the ideals and practices the people in the Victorian era had to follow. You know, they had to behave in a certain way to be considered dignified, especially if they were part of the aristocracy.
Exactly. So, yes, this is a comedy of manners. It satirizes upper class in Victorian England. And Wilde emphasizes their rigid ethos, which demanded proper behavior and high moral standards. So if something's rigid, of course, it's firm, it's inflexible, you can't compromise with it, it has to be this way, you can't change it. And the word ethos, I'm going to say ethos here, I like that pronunciation better, it's just kind of like the characteristic spirit of a culture or of the times, just the way people are doing things and the general spirit of the times at the time. It emphasized or demanded proper behavior and high moral standards. That was the ethos of Victorian England.
Yeah, I found a definition in the dictionary that was interesting where they actually use this word to talk about drama or plays. And they said if you had a play where there were very rigid ethos, that moral element in a play would determine the character's action more than just his thinking or his feelings. So they would decide to do things based on what society was telling them they must do. Of course, these two gentlemen wanted to get away from their social duties, so they would escape by using a make-believe name and then go and do what they wanted instead of doing what they were supposed to do. They had duties, but they wanted to escape and have a good time. That's why this is so fun. So these ethos, these rigid ethos, demanded proper behavior and high moral standards. And sometimes people, you know, they just have too much, you know, responsibility and duty on them, and they just want to get away. If you demand something, you keep saying you must do this, you must do this, and if you don't, you're in big trouble. And so these social and societal demands were too tough for these two gentlemen, at least.
Yep. This society, of course, demanded proper behavior. It had to act a certain way, wear proper clothes, say the right things, not do things that everybody else disapproves of and stuff like that. And they had high moral standards. You must be a member of the Church of England. You must not be homosexual, etc., etc. Well, these included being respectable, being polite, and marrying someone to maintain one's wealth and social class. So, yes, you had to be respectable. In other words, you couldn't be a savage. You couldn't be using four-letter words all the time.
Ooh.
You probably had to speak in the proper Queen's English, and you couldn't speak in a Liverpudlian accent or something like that. You also had to be polite. You could not be rude. You had to say please and thank you and things like that.
Even if you hated someone, you had to be polite. That was just expected, huh?
And also, you had to marry someone to maintain your wealth, okay? In other words, you couldn't meet some nice girl off in the country somewhere. She's a country girl. Hey, she's beautiful. She's poor. But hey, she's cool. She's got a nice personality. Nope, sorry. You can't have anything to do with her. You've got to marry someone to maintain your wealth. You've got to marry somebody from a respectable family and from a respectable social class.
So, for instance, here's an example of what we just said. Lady Bracknell forbids Gwendolyn's engagement to someone because she doesn't know what social background he comes from. Remember, he was found in Victoria Station. Someone had just left him behind. So if you forbid someone to do something, it just means you absolutely say no. They cannot do something. So you refuse to allow them to do something. It's a very strong verb. Usually I use it when I'm talking about a parent to a child. He forbade me. It's kind of a weird past tense form too. Mm. Forbade. F-O-R-B-A-D-E is the past tense. But this lady, she said, "You cannot! I forbid you to do this." It's also kind of an old-fashioned verb, I would say. We don't use it so much today in speaking. You'll see it a lot in writing, though, especially in literature.
Indeed. So forbid, of course, is the verb forbidden. You might hear that form used. It is forbidden to smoke in restaurants. For example, it's prohibited. You can't do it. It's against the law.
Yeah.
So in any case here, we're using the word forbid as a verb. Lady Bracknell forbids Gwendolyn to get married to someone from an unknown background. We don't know anything about him, so I'm sorry, you can't marry him. But she does approve of Algernon's marriage to Cecily, And the only reason she approved of that marriage was that because Cecily is going to inherit a fortune. Maybe she could have found out that Cecily was actually also left at a train station, or maybe she's from the labor class or something like that. But, oh, she didn't want to think about that. What she did want to think about was the fact that Cecily was going to inherit a fortune. Now, we like that part, okay? If there's money, we can forget about other stuff. So that kind of points out the hypocrisy of Victorian society. As I mentioned before, this word will come up later in today's lesson. But again, she approves of Algernon's marriage to Cecily because she's going to inherit a lot of money. To inherit here as a verb just means you get something from somebody when they die. You might inherit someone's house. You might inherit their fortune or whatever.
Or you could also use inherit to talk about some sort of characteristic that you have. I inherited my father's green eyes. You could say that. My dad's still alive, but he passed those eyes down to me through his DNA. So moving on to the next paragraph, guys, the play also criticizes Victorian society. If you criticize somebody or something, you point out what you think is wrong about it. You disagree with something. You might be criticized if you make a movie. The critics will say, oh, that was a stupid plot. Why did you pick those actors? They were horrible. So this play, the actual material in the play, criticized Victorian society. Oscar Wilde thought Victorian society was stupid and was very hypocritical. They would say, you know, one thing and do another. That's what hypocrisy is. He would criticize it in which unacceptable behavior may be excused as long as people present the appearance of behaving appropriately. So that's what made him really angry, was unacceptable behavior was okay as long as you appeared or put up the pretense of behaving appropriately or doing something correctly. And the example that our writer uses is perfect. When the two women meet at a tea party and are being so rude to each other. But if someone were to walk by and not hear the words, they would say, oh, what two beautiful girls. Oh, you know, they're very high class. They look terrific. But in reality, they were being very awful to each other.
Yeah, they might be being catty to each other.
Yeah, catty is a good word. Explain that one.
It just means you kind of say nice things to each other, but you really mean something else, especially if you're using a certain kind of tone.
You smile, but you insult somebody at the same time. Yeah, C-A-T-T-Y. We usually use it, unfortunately, when women are rude to each other.
It's kind of like the Chinese phrase, xiao li cang dao. There's like a knife in your smile or something. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure what the English equivalent of
that is.
But in any case here, yes, their tea party demonstrates or shows us this hypocrisy. Again, the unacceptable behavior being okay as long as you're behaving appropriately. And due to their misunderstanding, the two women can barely hold back their anger and insult each other through cleverly chosen, seemingly polite words. Now, they can't hold back their anger, but they actually do in a certain way. Nowadays, of course, the people get mad at each other, especially in American society and in Taiwanese society. Basically, you let the other person know that you're angry. How dare you do that? I'm so angry at you. Mm. People yell at each other, and they're actually quite direct. And they insult each other. They call each other names. They say they've got big noses and stuff like that. That's a direct insult. But in Victorian England, no, you had to choose your words cleverly. You used a lot of words that had double meanings.
Yeah.
And you would understand this, of course, if you read this play. And we'll talk about this some more in just a couple of seconds. But right now, we're going to take a break and listen to our Chinese teacher.
大家好，欢迎收听 English Digest， 我是哈利。今天我们要阅读的文章是 Unit 14文学单元的第三天课程。在今天的文章中，我们将阅读到《不可儿戏》这部作品所要探讨的主题，以及在嬉闹的内容中，王尔德所要批判的维多利亚时期的价值观。我们看到第一段的第一句 The importance of being earnest is a brilliant comedy of manners that satirizes the ideals and practices of the Victorian upper classes. 不可儿戏是一出精彩绝伦的仪态喜剧，讽刺维多利亚时期上层阶级的准则及惯例。动词 satirize 有讽刺、挖苦的意思。 其形容词就是最后一段第一句出现的 satirical, S-A-T-I-R-I-C-A-L, 挖苦人的。例如 I was irritated by Frank's satirical cartoon about a politician I respect. 法兰克对我所尊敬的一位政治人物画了讽刺漫画，这惹怒了我。我们接着看第一段的第二句。Wilde emphasizes their rigid ethos, which demanded proper behavior and high moral standards. 王尔德强调他们的道德观僵化，其要求恰当的行为和高道德标准。动词 demand 有要求的意思，后面可以接名词或不定词 to 加原形动词。例如 The customer was offended by the waiter's rude behavior and demanded to speak with the manager. 这位顾客被服务生无礼的行为冒犯，并要求要和经理谈话。 Demand 后面也可以接一个 that 名词子句，这时候的 that 子句会接主词，然后接 should 加原形动词，should 可以省略，所以 that 子句的动词一律用原形动词。例如 Our boss demanded that we should hand in our report by Friday, 或者是 Our boss demanded that we hand in our report by Friday, 我们老板要求我们在星期五前交出报告。我们接着看到第一段最后一句有一个动词 forbid, 禁止的意思，通常是指以强制性的口吻禁止某人做某事。动词三态是 forbid, forbade, forbidden. forbade, F-O-R-B-A-D-E. forbidden, F-O-R-B-I-D-D-E-N. 若要表示禁止某人做某事，我们可以说 forbid somebody to do something, 或是 forbid somebody from doing something. 例如 My parents forbid me from staying out past midnight. 我父母禁止我半夜外出。Ban, B-A-N, 也有禁止的意思，通常是指明文规定禁止某人做某事。片语是 ban somebody from doing something. 例如 Our school bans students from using smartphones in class. 我们学校禁止学生在课堂上使用智慧型手机。Prohibit, P-R-O-H-I-B-I-T, 也有禁止的意思，通常是指以规则或法律等来禁止某人做某事。片语是 prohibit somebody from doing something. 例如 Our government prohibits people from smoking in public places. 我们政府禁止人们在公共场所吸烟。
We're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Okay, let's continue to talk about our lesson. Now, we were talking about a very interesting scene in The Importance of Being Earnest. We've got Cecily and Gwendolyn at a tea party. They hate each other. They think they're marrying the same man. They're fighting over the same man because of the name Earnest. It actually turns out they're two different guys. They don't need to be fighting at all, but they're still fighting here. It's based on a misunderstanding, and they can't hold back their anger. They cannot contain their anger. They want to let it out. But remember, this is Victorian England. You've got to look polite. So they insult each other through cleverly chosen words. They sound polite, but they're actually really attacking each other. And they maintain an air of proper Victorian behavior by having tea together. But they still do some things to each other, to insult each other, while maintaining this air of proper behavior. Now, air here, that's not the stuff we breathe in this sense, right?
No. So you can have an air of something. Here we're saying an air of proper Victorian behavior. It's an impression of a quality or a manner that somebody is giving off. Oh, she had a faint air of boredom about her. She was acting very bored. You can also put on airs, guys, which means you're acting like you're a big deal, like you're maybe an important person, but you're really not. Maybe you're being very confident. condescending or treating people like you're better than they are. Oh, I hate her. She puts on airs. We'll often use that as well. So they were maintaining this air or this manner or attitude as if they were being very, very appropriate with their Victorian behavior, but they weren't in actuality. Cecily actually put sugar in Gwendolyn's tea when Gwendolyn doesn't want any. She kind of just ignores what Gwendolyn says she wants in her tea. And she also serves Gwendolyn cake when Gwendolyn had actually requested bread and butter. So that's one of the best scenes in the whole play, these two girls going at each other because they both think the same guy has asked them to marry them. So it's interesting.
That's a very clever aspect of literature when that happens based on a misunderstanding. They do that in situation comedies all the time.
Oh, I wanted to mention that word, Tom. Farce, F-A-R-C-E.
Okay.
It's a light, funny play where the plot actually depends on a crazy situation unfolding. And that's what we have here. They'll often describe this play as being a farce. F-A-R-C-E.
Very good. Okay, so let's move on now to the final paragraph here. The play's title itself is a satirical comment on society's ideals.
Uh-huh.
Now, remember, the title is The Importance of Being Earnest, but we've also got two guys in this play. Is it two or maybe three or two? I lost count. But
two.
Okay, two guys.
Two main leads. Yeah, they're other guys.
Who are actually named Earnest, but Earnest means honest also, so it's kind of a double meaning here. But this paragraph here is describing the title as being a satirical comment.
Mm.
Of course, satirical is from the noun satire, which means you're basically criticizing something, and usually you're being kind of subtle about it. You're not being direct about it. You use different forms of humor. Political cartoons are a form of satire as well. Criticizing something using artistic methods or comment or plays or stories or whatever. And yes, indeed, it is a satirical comment on the morals and ideals of Victorian society.
Yeah, it's also built around a pun, P-U-N. A pun is when you make a joke where there are different possible meanings of a word. For example, earnest is the name. Earnest as the adjective meaning sincere. This is the pun that has been made that Wilde is using throughout the play. So to be earnest, again, is to be serious and sincere. You really mean what you say, and you want to do the right thing. Yet both Jack and Algernon lead secret double lives in order to pursue pleasure and take a break from their social duties. If you were a pretty high social class, if you were part of the aristocracy back then, you really didn't have to work for a living. You just were wealthy, right? You didn't have anything to do. You didn't have to go to a job every day. So they would often have parties and social get-togethers. And Jack and Algernon sometimes would go, I don't want to go. I want to go play. I want to go do something naughty. So they would pretend they were in earnest, and then they would go out of town in order to pursue or follow pleasure. If you pursue something, it's something that you're chasing, right? Maybe you're pursuing a degree from a university, or maybe you're pursuing a specific guy or girl that you think is really hot and you want to date them. You can pursue people that way. They wanted to pursue pleasure and at the same time get away from their social duties and responsibilities.
Yeah, it would have been nice if they just could have come out and said it.
Yeah.
Gee, I want to go have fun. I don't want to go to these stupid social functions. We always have to be so pretentious and act like we're haughty and act like something we're not, but you could not do that in Victorian England. And in modern society, I suppose, you can't really do that either. You can't always be honest.
No.
You have to kind of beat around the bush and be sensitive about people's feelings. I understand the Dutch are actually pretty straightforward, which is probably something that conflicts with the way things are done out here where things are not so direct. So you might think the Dutch are a little bit too direct or something without being polite enough. They come to the point too quickly.
Mm.
Or also that's a conflict between East and West, like Americans tend to come straight to the point as well. So it could have been like that, but indeed they had to lead double lives. They couldn't come out and be earnest. They had to hide things. And they did this in order to pursue pleasure and take a break from those social duties. I don't blame them. I hate dressing up in a suit and acting like someone I'm not. I'd rather wear a t-shirt and shorts and go down and eat beef noodles at the night market and have a great time. But even when the truth is revealed, the couples happily continue with their lives without a shred of guilt or anger for deceiving others or being deceived themselves.So, yes, when the truth is revealed, when it comes out, the couples can continue with their lives and they don't feel guilty anymore. They don't have one shred, not one tiny bit of guilt or anger because they deceived others or because they were deceived themselves. Interesting.
Yeah, I love this. A shred is a fun word to pick up, guys. We usually see it.With a negative, oh, they don't have a shred of evidence. It just means a little tiny bit. So it's a great word. You should pick that one up, a shred of something. They don't even have a shred of guilt or anger about fooling people, deceiving others, lying to them, or being deceived themselves. It's kind of fun. But that was the way they were able to have some amusement in their lives.With all of these very formal, stiff Victorian ideals and rules that they had to live with. And it was kind of tough for some of these guys. Right now, we're going to listen one more time to our Chinese teacher.
我们接着看到文章最后一段的第三句有一个动词 pursue, P-U-R-S-U-E, 有追求、追赶的意思。Kevin has been devoted to pursuing his acting career.凯文一直致力于追求其演戏生涯。Pursue 的名词是 pursuit, P-U-R-S-U-I-T, 追求、追踪的意思。片语 in pursuit of something 就是追求某事物的意思。Kelly went to China in pursuit of a more promising career. 凯莉到中国去追求一个更有前途的职业生涯。以上就是今天的课程，谢谢大家收听。
That's it for today. Thank you so much for joining us, and please join us again next time for another edition of our program. And we all look forward to next month when we talk about another work of literature. From all of us here at English Digest, I'm Tom.
I'm Stephanie.
Goodbye. Bye.